You're listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Today is episode 228 right here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Welcome back. I am your host, Nate Lull. My guest today is Oneonta grad Evan Sitz. It's the second time that Evan has been on the show. He was on back in 2020, so it's been a while, and wanted to catch up with him again as he is a fantastic golfer, as he is on the Division I team at Binghamton University and is one of the best amateur golfers in the area. So we had a chance to talk with him about how things are going at Binghamton, what his next step might be after that in terms of playing professionally, and just really excited to see what the future holds for Evan. Have to say a big thank you to Evan and the whole Sitz family. Of course, they own Oleout Creek Golf Course in Franklin, and that is where I have my Nate Lull Scholarship Fundraiser Golf Tournament, and they just go above and beyond to help me put that on. And you know, in the last couple of years, Evan has become a very good friend of mine. Fun to not only work with him for the tournament because he puts his heart and soul into it, but just get to know the game of golf better through him, get a chance to watch him play. We've done a couple of tournaments together, and just fun to be around someone who can play golf at that level. As someone who's not a very good golfer, it's fun to get the opportunity to see when someone has skills like that. So I've really enjoyed getting to know him and his family the last few years. All fantastic people. Can't thank them enough. And if you're a golf junkie, you're really going to enjoy today's episode. So thanks again to Evan for coming in. The Nate Lull Podcast is brought to you by a variety of our special sponsors. Huge thank you to them. They include Covered Bridge Farm Market in Unadilla, JM Electrical Contracting of Bainbridge, Advantage Maytag Home Appliance Center in Oneonta, Sportsfield Specialties of Delhi, Certified Financial Planner Ed Curley. You can find him in Oneonta. The Delaware National Bank, also of Delhi. NYCM Insurance of Edmiston. Springbrook, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company of New Berlin, Stewart Shops, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, and Certified Auto Outlet in Oneonta, as well as Gavin's Pizzeria of Sydney and Macho's Tacos of Sydney. And many of those sponsors were also a huge help and a huge support for my golf tournament this year, where we raised $10,000 to go towards the Nate Lull Scholarship. So again, I can't thank those local businesses enough, and I hope that you will use those businesses if you need them here locally in the near future. All right, episode 228, Evan Sitz today, right here on the Nate Lull Podcast.
Four! Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day. But it went straight down the middle, like they say. Whack down the fairway. It went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just a smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 228 today here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Our guest, his second appearance here on the show. Last time was episode 64, man. That's a while ago.
Yeah, it was.
2020. So a lot to catch up on with Evan Sitz here, Division I golfer at Binghamton University and an Oneonta grad. So going into the fifth year, is that right?
Yep.
So how did that all work? Was it your COVID eligibility? You transferred after your first year from a D3 up to D1. How did the fifth year come about?
Yeah, just the COVID extra year. I'm just taking, I have a few classes to finish up to finish my degree, but nothing crazy.
All right. I mean, are you excited to go back for one more year? Anything, you know, what are kind of the goals of this last year at this point?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. We got a pretty good team. We were young last year. So everybody's got a little more experience. got a pretty light class load size. So like I'm taking four classes, I'm pretty sure, throughout the whole year.
For the whole year?
Yeah, so it's 3-1, I'm pretty sure it's how it's going to go.
Not so bad, right?
So I'm hoping to play a lot of golf.
What was the biggest jump for you? And I know we chatted a little bit last time about this, but, you know, coming from small high school to a D3 and then getting the chance to come up to a D1, what has been the biggest change for you throughout all that?
I would just say, like, knowing that I could play with everybody who we play with. You know, it doesn't seem like a lot until you're in the moment there. Like, I think, like, the biggest thing was, like, oh, like, in high school, like, you know, you play with the five or six guys on the team, and then, like, you have some good tournaments here, and then you're playing well, and you go and make a new jump to that D3 level, and, like, you struggle early, and then, like, all right, maybe I shouldn't be here. And then you make that jump to D1, and it's like you have one bad event, and you're like, your mind's just racing. So, like, just getting to the point where I could play with everybody here, too, was kind of the biggest thing.
Did you have a moment when you got to Binghamton where you doubted yourself, where you were like, I don't know if I should be here or can play with these guys? And then how did you kind of get out of that funk?
So it didn't help that I came in during COVID, for sure. So that was all, like, up in the air. But then also, like, I felt like I was, like, I'm the new kid. Like, if I take somebody's spot, are they not going to like me anymore? Like, are we not going to be good friends or good teammates? But, like, they were all very good people. So it was, like, no matter who was playing, like, everybody supported each other. So that definitely helped. But, I mean, at the end of the day, just try to play golf and be who I am. So
we'll circle back to the Binghamton stuff because I do have more questions there. But I kind of thought we should talk about the summer that you've had because it's been really good. You've kind of put yourself out there in some tournaments, and I'm assuming maybe you went into this trying to challenge yourself. But, you know, as we talk about some of these, did you kind of make a plan for the summer that said, I want to try to do these events, qualify, and see where I can go?
So actually, this summer, I wasn't really going to play in any events. Last August, in our first event, I kind of hurt my back a little bit, kind of tweaked it. And so the goal for the summer was to kind of fully resolve that issue and get it taken care of. So I actually met with a guy out of Binghamton, PT guy, Tim Gould at Birdie Builders, great guy. And we started working on that. Like right now, like I'm in really good shape with that. So it's been helpful. But then, I mean, just kind of found tournaments as the summer went on. And it's like, let's see what we could do.
Just building off of that, something that popped into my head here. I remember overhearing you say, at some point this summer, you had done something with your body or your swing and it had added yardage to your drive. Would that have anything to do with your PT?
Yeah, so that's pretty much all to do with the PT. I mean, the first time I went in there, I thought I was just going to be like, oh, we're going to work out and we're just going to try to like work on the back. But first time I went in there, he's like, all right, let me see you hit a few balls. I was like, all right, like I thought this was just working out. I didn't know I was going to actually have to swing. And he's like, all right, so I know what we're going to do. So we went through a couple exercises and then he explained why we were doing it. So actually, like, my back wasn't bothering me at all, but it was like hindering in a way like I wasn't noticing it. So what happened was I was like jumping through my swing, not rotating because I was afraid I was going to hurt my back again type of thing. So we fixed that. And then ever since we fixed that, like I have full club and a half longer, which is great.
So you didn't even really realize that you were like kind of compensating for something?
Yeah.
And he noticed it right away?
He noticed it right away. So it was really helpful.
Is he a golf-specific guy?
Yeah, so he used to be a partner in a PT clinic down in Johnson City, but he decided to branch out and start Birdie Builders, which is all just golf stuff. The reason why I played so well this year, pretty much. So,
how much, you know, you hear about it all the time, but like, how much does that really add to your game, just getting that little bit of extra distance?
The distance definitely helps, but I think the biggest thing with him was having the confidence that, like, all right, I'm swinging good where my back's not going to bother me. It's not going to be in my way. Like, I'm just going to go out there and do my thing.
That's amazing, man. I mean, hard to picture that you didn't even realize that you were, like, right? You just kind of blocked out, like, yeah. Oh, I have to do this to succeed, and then you don't even realize that you're... I would equate it to maybe, like, somebody kind of favoring a knee or something, right?
Yeah,
and you don't even realize it. So, well, the one tournament I wanted to talk about first off would be the Monroe Invitational. So, I mean, I feel like there was a couple different events that go to the New York State Men's Amateur Championship. But let's talk about Monroe first, because I know last time you and I chatted, this was one that was you were really excited about.
Yeah, definitely. It's a pretty big event. You know, like one of my favorite things about that tournament was on the final round I played, the third round, the starter came up and he goes, "Is Binghamton like central New York, like 2 hours away, 3 hours away?" I go, "Yep." He goes, "Well, that's the first time I've seen that school here, so that's pretty cool." So,
really?
Yeah, I mean, like, the guy who ended up winning goes to Wake Forest. I mean, they had five guys from Florida who were the national champions this year, so to play with those guys for a couple of days, it was pretty cool.
So how did this event get on your radar? It's in Rochester, so obviously not too far from home, but far enough, and is it something you have to get invited to? How does that work?
So, yeah, if you get invited, you get automatically in the field. I knew about it because of a couple teammates that played in it. It's a pretty big event. Like, they just started this thing called the Elite Am Series. There's 8 or 9 events that are in that series, and Monroe's probably like 10 on the list. So it's a pretty big Am event. But I decided to do it just because I wanted to play in something. And so I went out for the qualifier. I had zero expectations, really. Just like, let's just go out there and play and see what happens. And then got off to a really good start. 3 under bogey free through 13. And we had a rain delay, actually, through 12. Hit my tee shot, horn went off, and I probably put it in, like, the worst spot on that hole. And I was like, if I was, like, 2 seconds later, like, I wouldn't have teed off.
Right.
But so I ended up going back out there, ended up chipping in, so that helped. Made a couple bad holes on the way in, 3-putted my last 2 holes. So I ended up in T5th, ended up going in a 7-for-4 playoff and getting through on the third hole.
Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong. Is that the tournament where, like, there's a 7-way tie, essentially? And like, how do they play that out?
So originally it was top 4 spots, so there's 90 guys for 4 spots when we teed off. And then a kid withdrew from the actual tournament, so now a 5th spot opened up. So now there's 7 guys tied for 5th place. And they opened up another tee time just because there's so many guys for 1 spot. They thought it would be pointless to do 7-for-1. So they ended up doing 7-for-4. Yeah, so there's 7 of us, and then 4 of us got in. 3 alternates ended up getting in, which is nice. They added us another spot, so everybody got in. But that was a long day, for sure. I mean, I got there probably 8 o'clock at 10:40 tee time. I didn't get done playing with the playoff until about 7:38. Waited 2 hours for the playoff to even start, so.
Wow. So when you're going out to play a tough course like this, had you seen this course before? Did you have any chance to scout it out?
I played 12 or 13. I think I might have got all 18 in that day in the practice round on the Sunday before, but it was pretty dark and we were kind of just rushing to get it in. But that was the first time I was out there that Sunday before the qualifier, and Monday was the second time I played it.
So, I mean, do you feel... I mean, I guess you're probably used to it from college, right? Like, you're playing on tons of different courses all over the country. Do you just have to rely on your skills at that point? Because it's like you can't really know every course in and out like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing is you just got to remember why you're doing it and why you're there. And, like, the only thing you can control is how you swing it. Once the ball is in the air, you have no control over it. So you just got to focus on making your best swing possible.
How difficult for the average golfer that's listening out there that loves to play around here? Of course, your family owns Ole Out, and we'll chat more about that as we did last time. But, you know, for the guys that play the Country Club and Colonial and the places around here, you go to a place like this tournament, like, how much more difficult is the course?
It's just a different type of golf because, I mean, the rough is probably 1 or 2 longer. So it's a lot more penalizing. The greens are a lot faster. They're firm, but they're still, like, receptive to the hold. But, like, you put in some of these bunkers, they're a lot deeper than a lot of the bunkers around here. It's just a different style of golf than what some people would be used to.
Do you feel like you have to play almost mistake-free to make a cut?
No, I think in that one I had a bunch of mistakes, but I still think I could have made the cut. Like, my whole second round was all mistakes. Like, I got lucky with what I shot. But the third round, I was, like, 1 under, I think, going into the back 9 and just made a few mistakes there. But, like, if I just played normal, I think I would have made it. So, but it's still one of those things where, like, if you're going to compete and be in the top, like, you can't make a mistake.
When you get into that playoff situation, How exactly do they do that, and what's the pressure like in a situation like that?
So I signed my card, found out I was going to be in the playoff. They're like, you just got to wait till the last group comes in because, like, two more guys come in at two under, and then everybody at one under is out.
Right.
So now it's like you're just – your mind's racing, right? So you're, like, you're thinking, all right, hopefully no one comes in at two under because
right.
then we're out. But then you're like also like, oh, I got to get ready for this playoff. So, I mean, I was pretty cool and collective, I thought. I just warmed up here and there, like, took some breaks, like, didn't do anything crazy. Just focused on, like, my breathing and stuff, which Teddy McGraw actually helped me with a while back. It kind of gave me some advice, but that really helped. You know, just trying to stay in the moment and just realize, like, it's cool to be there. Like, you're playing golf and you're playing at this level. Like, not a lot of people get to do it. You just got to enjoy it while you can.
I'm glad you brought Teddy up. I wanted to talk about that. Of course, you went to high school with Teddy at OHS and good friends with him and still see him when he's home now. And, you know, he's a pretty good golfer as well. When he gets out there, he gets pretty competitive. But when we just had Teddy on recently, it was interesting to hear him open up about some of the mental training that he's done now. And I know not long after that, you had a chance to chat with him. So what was that conversation like?
Yeah, so it was right after he got drafted. I just kind of sent him I gave him a day to kind of enjoy the time with his family and his friends, and just text him, say, like, hey, congrats, like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, go do big things, like, I know you would. And I was just like, I pretty much said, I was like, now that you're, like, you're at that level, like, what's one thing that somebody, like, wouldn't see that, like, help you get to that level? You know, because, like, I'm trying to get to a certain similar level, and he's, like, honestly, like, breathing. And so, like, the biggest thing was he's like, all right, five breaths in and out of your nose for 5 seconds. And, like, he's like, after that, like, you could just tell your mind you're going to do anything. And, like, I found that to be true. I used that in my pre-shot routine on the opening tee shot every day at Monroe, and probably hit the three best tee shots I've ever hit an opening tee shot. So,
wow. So even just as simple as kind of taking a moment, taking some deep breaths. Is it hard in that moment? And I wish I'd asked Teddy this, but for you, all right, so you have to kind of consciously take that time and take those deep breaths. Is it hard to kind of let go? Like, it's easy, I would think, in theory, to be like, all right, I'm going to take some deep breaths and it's going to help me here. But, like, fully trying to, like, relax, even though you're about to hit this monster tee shot.
Yeah. I mean, at first I was like, it was hard to get used to. But I mean, after a while, this felt like part of my routine, so it was, like, normal. And, like, I just told myself after that fifth breath, I was like, all right, you're here, you do what you do, like, type of thing, like, just go play golf.
It's something I've always admired with the high school athletes that I cover, and I think it might be something that the high school athletes that I see doing this don't even know they're doing it. Like, they can almost just turn their brain off and be in that moment. Like, a guy that can score 30 points in a basketball game, or someone who can step up and hit a big penalty kick in soccer or whatever. It's like, how are they not thinking, overthinking it in the moment, right? So I feel like maybe for you and for Teddy, the breathing and any of the other exercises just kind of help you almost blank out in a way. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that, like, in the first playoff hole, I stuck to that routine. I had, like, a 12-footer for par to stay in, like, I honestly feel like when I got over the ball, like, I just kind of felt like nothing was happening. Like, I was just on, like, a putting green practicing. Like,
yeah.
It didn't feel like anything. Like, and it went in, like, picked the ball out of the hole, and I was like, oh, wait, there's, like, people here watching. Like, I just kind of forgot for a second.
I know I've asked you this before, but when you get to that level and there's, like, a lot of people watching you golf, does that change things at all, or are you kind of just so used to it at this point?
I've gotten more used to it, I would say. It's just going back to sticking that routine and doing what you do. Like, you're there for a reason. Like, these people want to watch good golf. Like, let's throw them good golf type of thing.
I had to laugh this year at my tournament at Oleout, which, of course, you are a huge help with. But I had several guys come up to me and be like, I don't want to tee off on one because everyone's there watching me. Like, because we have the tent there for lunch. And it is amazing how, as a bad golfer like myself, like, you get nervous about that, and all of a sudden, like, everything starts going through your mind, and all of a sudden you're putting one in the woods, you know? It's like, it's so easy for that to happen in the game of golf. It's crazy, but I did want to say publicly, like, thank you for your help with the tournament. This year was, I think, extra crazy with the weather and everything. What was that like for you showing up 5 in the morning and it's pouring rain?
Well, first, like, the whole family helped out tremendously.
Yeah,
like,
very true.
We couldn't do it without them either. You know, it's a grind, like, just getting ready for it. I think the tee time thing worked out great for you. You got more teams in. The weather was definitely something that I haven't experienced before trying to run a tournament. It rained so hard that all the greens were underwater in like 10 minutes. And just trying to get, I think we had at least 20 groups out there still. So like trying to get everybody to calm down, just like, hey, like give us 15 minutes. We'll get you right back out. Just a little wet. Because you don't want to call something like that, especially when the last group just teed off. Like, you can't call that. You got to let them get them back out. There's plenty of time to finish. Like, but no, I think it was a great turnout. I think a lot of people were happy, and I'm glad to do it and glad to help.
Yeah, so I still haven't posted this, and I need to. I probably will by the time we release this episode in a couple of days. But we raised 10 grand this year, which is about 3 grand more than last year for the scholarship. Between the golf tournament, our event at Awestruck, a couple of really nice donations from Butler Auto Sales, and our good friend Ed Curley at Curley Wealth Management. I mean, we handed out $14,000 last year to the class of 2023, which was awesome. And I'm hoping we can do more for the class of 2024 between our Awestruck event coming up, which is September 24th. Shameless plug there if you want to come down. But again, the tournament was great. And for anyone who didn't know, like, it poured all night the night before. You and I get there. We're the first people there. We say, hey, I think this is going to work out. We look at the radar, and somehow magically it missed us. But then it did rain in the middle of the day, and man, it rained. It rained so hard. How is the course able to handle that? Like, the greens were underwater, and then boom, we were able to get everybody back out there.
Yeah, so luckily we have a pretty good drainage system at Oleout. It drains pretty well, pretty quick. I mean, that's just how it dried up so quick. I mean, we got about an inch and a half of rain the last 2 days, I would say. Two nights ago, it rained pretty hard, but there's really no water on the course. So it just drains really well.
That's wild. I thought we were in trouble when it started raining like that, but we got it in. And again, I can't say thanks enough to your family and all our volunteers and our helpers. We had 40 teams come through this year, and we did tee times, which I think worked out really well. And, you know, what do you think the max is? Can we hit 50, do you think?
I think, I know.
It'll be a long day.
I know Amanda, your wife, probably isn't going to be happy when I say this, but I think you could do 2 days. And I think the max is unknown right now. I mean, for 1 day, we're probably looking at 50, 55 if we do tee times again. But if you do 2 days, you could maybe get like 70. Like, it's just
that'd
unknown.
Be wild. That would be wild. We always do it in July, which is tough, I know, because it's midsummer. People are busy. There's a lot of different events. The county events are going on. I mean, 2 days does intrigue me. Sorry, Amanda. I would worry more about the weather with 2 days. Some days it's just like, some years it's like, okay, get through the 1 day and, mm-hmm. and you're good to go. And this year, if we were trying to do 2 days, like the day before, really
wouldn't have been good.
Would not have been good. So, but I'm so thankful looking back on it now, and I didn't notice it at the time, but like, say we had to call it, like, I'm out a lot of money that we've put forward for food and all the stuff like that, and then we don't bring anything in for the scholarship. Mm-hmm. Probably would have had to do a lot of scrambling, other events, just to try to keep our funds where we want them to be.
Yeah.
We did keep some money back from last year, so we have a little bit of an extra fund, but I kind of got home that night and I was like, oh man, like that would have been really bad if we didn't have the tournament. So it made me start thinking about what are some other ways that, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a 2 day thing is good. So you don't get in 1 day, but at least you get the other type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I can't say thanks enough. It's a huge thing. And it was so fun to go around and hand out those checks, man.
Yeah.
Like that's when it really hit me last mm-hmm. year, is going around to graduation, handing the checks out. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, everybody appreciates what you do for this area with sports and everything, so we're all very thankful to have you.
It's crazy to think, like, you're in your fifth year of college. I feel like I blink, and, I mean, you and Teddy and Graham, that whole crew was playing not that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like that long ago, but, like, all of a sudden, like you said, I could graduate, I think, by the end of the year if I wanted to, but I'm staying for the spring semester just to play golf, too.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy to think, like, even if I didn't have the extra year, I'm supposed to be graduated. So, like, I don't know, just weird. It hasn't sunk in yet.
So for you, what's next after BU? Because obviously your family owns the golf course. There's a lot of different ways you could go with that. And I know you're passionate about that, but also, you know, you want to get to a place where maybe you can play for a living, at least for a while. I mean, what's going through your head?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of unknowns still. You know, like, I want to be there for my family, and I love being at the course, helping out, running tournaments, doing what I can. And it's, I want to play professional golf at some point too. So finding that balance, or I guess finding enough courage to kind of step away from the course for a little bit and just being like, hey, I'm going to go do my own thing for a while. You know, it's a lot of unknowns right now. I definitely will play some sort of professional golf when I graduate. Just not sure what or where, how or when, you know. But I mean, if I'm leaning more towards of kind of sticking around for the summer, practicing, playing a few events here and there up here, and then like November comes, head to Florida and playing some mini tour stuff and try to do some Q school stuff.
Are there some different options that you need to look at? Like you said, there's Q school, and I mean, I'm not an expert on any of this, but you hear about like the Corn Ferry Tour and mm-hmm. all this. Like, how do you even get involved in any of those? Is this something you need an invite? Do you have to pay your way in? Like, mm-hmm. I don't even know.
Yeah, so I mean, for the Corn Ferry, you got to go through Q school, and to get into Q school, you just got to write a check. You know, like you say, here's the price for Q school. You make it through the first round, you move on to second round, and then if you get it through all four rounds, you got some status moving forward to the next year. But I mean, professional golf is A, very, very hard, and B, really, really expensive.
Right.
So I mean, like a lot of the mini tour one day stuff in Florida is it's like $400 or $500 a day for just one tournament. And if you're not shooting 66 or better, like you're not making any money, you're losing money. You know, you got your gas, you got your hotel, you got your food, you got your entry fees and stuff. It can get expensive quick.
I was over at Delhi recently, and Dave Earhart was there, and we were chatting, and he goes, you almost, if you're doing something like what Evan wants to do and other guys try to do it, like you almost need like a backer.
Yeah.
In a way.
I mean, luckily I got a couple guys who've been through that, the same process I'm trying to go through. So, I mean, they've been able to kind of help me out and point me in the right direction on how to like save up for it, how to like make money for it really too. Like,
yeah.
Like one of my roommates, a good friend of mine, at his club back home, and he's from Woodstock. They did a fundraiser for him and the head pro for their professional golf careers. And then, they each walked out with about $20,000 just for professional golf stuff. So, I mean, nothing like that's going to happen at Holyoke. But luckily I'm a member at Binghamton Country Club, and there's a couple members there that are very supportive of what I do. The one actually went out and caddied for me at the Monday Q for the Travelers. So, I mean, and he's been through like the same thing. One of his best friends is on the PGA Tour. So, like, you know, just I'm surrounded by a bunch of great people. So I think I'm on the right track so far.
Is it also something where if there was a local business that wanted to help back you, I mean, is that something you'll look into, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the PT guy, Tim, we're kind of working towards that once I turn professional, get my status and not an amateur out of college anymore. That's something we're looking into. There's a member at Olayout who's looking to help out a little bit. But yeah, absolutely. Just, I mean, a lot of the guys now that are on mini tours have three or four sponsors that kind of take care of them for the year, and they just see what happens from there.
What's the process of getting through Q school? Like, is it just literally you need to score high enough? And how long does that take to get in and get out?
So Q school is four rounds or four stages. First round, like so many get in out of like a certain percentage get in. And if you move on to second stage, and a certain percentage of second stage get on to third stage, same thing, third stage gets the fourth stage. And I think at the end of the year, Corn Ferry top 25 guys in the money list get their PGA Tour status for the year. So I'm not sure how many get in exactly from fourth stage or final stage to the Corn Ferry, but it just like they slowly eliminate a certain amount of players each round.
Are most PGA guys that are out there right now that have their card, have they gone through a similar process?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them have. Like Max Homa, I'm pretty sure, went through, at that time was web.com. It's the same tour, just different name now. He went through that process. He kind of bounced back and forth between the PGA for a year, back to the web.com for a year. A lot of those guys, like a lot of the guys, I mean, if you look at like the top 10 guys, they're never going to do that. They have enough money, enough exemptions, enough sponsors. They're never going to have to worry about that. But you look at the guys on the bubble, like the 125 in the FedEx Cup ranking and stuff, like they bounce back and forth all the time.
It's amazing to think about. And, you know, watching a Netflix show like Full Swing, right? Like you see a couple of those guys that did come up through the ranks and just how hard it was for them to get up that high. I mean, is there any sort of a percentage of guys that actually get through and make it, or no idea?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there is, but I don't know the actual percentage. But it's just extremely hard. You know, I mean, it's a definitely a grind and a process. And then, like, if you really want to do it, you just got to stick it out and see what happens.
For you, like, obviously you're a Division I golfer, so golf is a full-time thing. But do you look forward to the time where you literally might only golf, get rid of classes, get rid of all the other baloney, like workout, eat, sleep, golf?
I mean, if I could do that, I'd be living life for sure. That's definitely the goal one day, but I don't know if I would do that my whole life. Like, I think right now my plan is to try to do some professional stuff for 5 or 6 years. I mean, unless it takes me other places, but I mean, after 5 or 6 years, if it's not really working out, we're kind of just going to come back. And I mean, eventually I want to open my own academy somewhere where I could give lessons and kind of give fittings. And a big thing that I've been getting into, especially this year, I ran a junior golf camp. So that's something else I've been wanting to get into for a while, and it turned out great. And it's what it's all about, getting the juniors ready for the next level and get them playing.
I think a lot of people were very excited about your junior golf clinic. Tell us about the numbers, because even when you told me, I'm thinking, all right, Evan's going to have a junior golf clinic. I'm thinking 10 kids, and you were like full to capacity.
Yeah, I mean, when I put it out there, I mean, I wanted to get as many as I possibly could just because I think it'd be great. But I'm like, I'll probably get like 12 kids, 15 kids
right.
Max. Like, I don't need to have anybody help. Like, I'll be okay. And like, they just kept signing up. And like the morning of, I look and there's another person that signed up the night before. And so I ended up with 35 kids. It was great. I had some good help. Gavin Bonskowski came over and helped for a day.
Yep.
And then a couple of the members came over and helped the other 2 days. But it turned out great, and I think they had a lot of fun. We did like a minimal amount of golf instruction, I think, and it was more of like games and just like some fun stuff to get them interested, you know. Had a lot of good players. I was pretty surprised. Like a lot of 8 and 9 year olds with pretty good swings. So it was pretty cool to see too. There's a future coming. So,
yeah. So what do you do? Like, how did you come up with a schedule for the day for that? Like, was it just kind of all the fun things that you've learned over the years?
Yeah. So I worked a junior golf clinic at Oneonta 1 year with Mike Bell, who actually, I believe, just got the Stanford head pro job now.
Oh, nice. So, okay.
But he used a lot of the games he played just because the kids had a lot of fun. So one of the big, like, the hot games that was popular in the 3 days, it was touchdown golf. So I set up 2 little end zones, like probably 30 or 40 feet away, and like they'd be in teams, and you put it in your end zone, your team gets 7 points, right? And then at the end, like, I kept tally of like who got extra points. Like, we had a long drive contest and a straightest drive contest, and, you know, we kept points, and then whoever had the most points in each age group, I just kind of gave them a little prize. And everybody seemed to have fun. I mean, it was fun for me. Like, I got a little note from all girl, and she told me that I was the best teacher ever and drew me a couple pictures, and that she loves golf now and she wants to keep playing. So to me, that's what it's all about. I mean, that made my week more than anything. So
you have to think, is that going to be such a big piece for some kid that now they do, instead of going to do something else, now they put their time towards golf, and who knows what happens down the road for them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a couple kids in the camp that want to play golf, like, seriously, too. Like, one example is Cason Miller, Mr. Miller's son.
Really? Okay.
He's got a good swing. He's pretty excited. I know his dad was telling me he wants to play on the golf team when he gets – I think he's in sixth grade now, maybe.
Yeah.
So when he gets in seventh grade, he wants to play. I mean, he had a really good swing. His brother had a good swing too, but those two kids are just athletes. Like you can see it.
Yeah, I'm excited for them to come forward, and I'm torn on it a little bit because I know that, you know, Matt's going to step away when the boys, I think Matt has said publicly, like, this will be his last year of coaching girls varsity basketball at Oneonta, and then George Fody will probably take over. I think that's the plan. If I just blew up the Oneonta world, I'm sorry. But he said, you know, that's been my plan since the boys were born. Like, when they get to a certain age, I'm going to stop coaching so I can support them. But you just know those kids are going to be great athletes.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Frank McCroney's son was there.
Yeah.
He could bomb it for, I think he's 8 or 9.
That's awesome.
Like, a couple other UNITO kids were there. Like, there's just a lot of good swings, and it was just cool to see that they were having fun, too. That was the biggest thing, so.
For me, I wonder, like, and you and I always talk about this, and I'm overdue to make some posts about Bailey Shoemaker. You know, you wonder where her love for golf started. And I am going to try to get her on the show at some point. For anyone who doesn't know, Bailey went to Unadilla Valley, was like a South Edmiston kid, and made it to the New York State Golf Championship. I think she got second 2 years in a row as a 7th and 8th grader. Moved to Florida and has a full ride to USC and has just been doing awesome stuff. What's it been like for you to watch her from the outside, just knowing, like, here's a local kid that's, like, really doing incredible stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I've talked to her a few times. She could play, for sure. There's no doubt about that. But she just, I think her parents realized, like, when she's young enough, that she has potential. And they, you know, I think as a younger kid, it stinks moving away from school, especially all your friends. But I think she had to be dedicated enough to be, like, understand why. But she just surrounded herself with good golf, and I think that kind of separated her from everything. I mean, the 2 years she finished runner-up, I think the girl who won plays at USF.
Yeah.
Or South Florida or Central Florida, maybe, one of the two schools. So it wasn't like it was just she didn't play well. She played against somebody who's just as good as her, you know? But, I mean, I don't know her too well, but, I mean, she made it to the round of 16, I think, in the U.S. Women's Am this year, which is probably like her fourth time in a row making it that far, which is, if you make it to that event, usually like you have a pretty good resume, but to make it that far, like, it just shows how good you are.
And I don't know exactly how it works, but there was a couple of tournaments she played over the last year or so where she was playing against some like legit high level talent and was doing very well. And she's playing some of the hardest courses in the country. And like I said, now it seems like she's been around forever, and she's finally just going to college now to go out to California, to USC. Going to be exciting. It seems like someone that we could really see, like, make a run at being a very good pro.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she'll definitely play professional golf somewhere at some point in time. I'm assuming that's what she's going to do, too. If you're that good, I don't really plan on someone or seeing someone stop, you know?
Yeah.
She's played in one U.S. Open. She's already played in a couple LPGA events. So, like, she's right there.
She's
already
right there.
So
we're working on getting her, and she's been very open to doing a Zoom one. But I said I would love to do it in person because I just think you get a better interview that way. And I said, you know, do you ever come back up here at all? She said, not that much. And I've toyed around with the idea of doing a podcast series in Tampa because there's so many people from up here that live around the Tampa area. And I was like, I could go down for like a long weekend or a week and grab like literally 5 or 6 interviews. Mm-hmm. And so we were messing around with that this summer. Another Oneonta guy I'd like to get while I'm down there is Eric Neander, mm-hmm. who's the GM of the Rays, which would be just so cool. But Bailey said, I live here and I train here, but I'm not here that much. Like, literally every weekend, we're gone somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you think about it, like, some of these tournaments, like Monroe is a good example. Like, I left Sunday morning, practice round Sunday afternoon. You know, I probably could have left Saturday afternoon if I didn't have to work at home.
Right.
But, you know, I get there, qualifier Monday, end up getting in. Practice rounds Tuesday, decide not to play because I've already played 2 rounds and I kind of want to rest a little bit. So I just go practice. And then you get the first round, second round, third round, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then if you make the cut, you're playing Saturday, right? And you're not getting done till 2 or 3 o'clock. So it's a full week worth of travel and being away. So like in the amount of events she plays in, she's probably gone, I would probably say 60 to 70% of the time.
Yeah. She said, I'm not home much. When I am, it's like we're repacking, unpacking from one trip, repacking for the next trip. It would just be very difficult. She's like, I don't see, like it wouldn't be a problem to do if I'm home, if we could ever get that date. It might be a little easier, I'm wondering, with college and having maybe a little bit more of a break here and there. But I would love to go down and do that Tampa series. We have a bunch of people down there that I was like, it would just be fun to go down and drive around and get 4 or 5, 6 interviews and then pop back home. Mm-hmm. So Neander would also be, he's kind of like one of my bucket list guys. Like here's a Oneonta High School guy who is the GM of a Major League Baseball team. To get him and to get Bailey in one trip would be certainly a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, speaking of baseball, let's go back to Teddy. Is it surreal for you to see him get drafted like that? Like, here's a guy that's just like you've known him your whole life.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I think back to, like, my freshman year, like, you look at Teddy and, like, you're like, just a normal kid. And
yeah.
Then he goes out and plays basketball, and you're like, oh, he's an athlete. Like, but, like, I didn't think then, like, oh, he's going to the MLB. Like, I never would have thought that, you know? I mean, I didn't. Like, all my good friends played baseball, pretty much. And, like, we always hung out and stuff. But I never really, like, got to dive deep and, like, know where they're at or what their thought process was, you know. And then, like, but then, like, once I heard, like, oh, he's looking at, like, you know, Duke. I think Binghamton might have been one of his options at one point.
Yep.
But, like, Wake, Notre Dame. He's going on all these visits. Like, he's like, oh, it becomes a little more possible. And then, like, once he got to Wake and, you know, I think he struggled early, but he found his groove, like, and then the draft talks came about, and then it's like, oh, it's a possibility now. Like, but then after Cape, like, we're like, oh, just a matter of time now. So it's definitely cool to see. You know, I don't think they could have got any better of a guy out there in Seattle. So
is it also weird? I mean, I know we've rattled this off before, but that whole group of guys that you golf with, all doing really big things. Ryan Packard, you know, Tanner B. Yang, John Mikolajczyk, just all playing high-level baseball, all might have a chance to play it for a living for a while.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely cool to see. Those guys definitely put in the right amount of work, and they're so passionate about it. Yeah, it's just really cool to see, and, I mean, I hope all four of them make it.
Let's talk about the Men's Amateur Championship. It's down in New Rochelle. Was there a connection between the two? Did you have to do well at Monroe to get to that, or was it different? I know you also had a play-in event at Binghamton, maybe?
Yeah, so the had to do a qualifier, happened to be at our home course for school, the Lynx of Hiawatha.
Gotcha.
Played extremely well, best round of the summer, shot 65. So I got in through that. So it was a cool round. I mean,
and you were number one there, right?
Yeah.
Top qualifier. That's awesome.
So yeah, I didn't really think about it at the time until I got home, and my mom was like, that's the first time he finished first in a couple of years. And I was like, oh, it's just a qualifier. But I'm like, oh, it's still, you know, it just felt good to be on top again. Like to be like, oh, I'm playing good now. Like we're back, like type of thing.
Yeah. Cause you're playing in these huge college tournaments where a top 10, a top 20 is a big deal. So, mm-hmm. It didn't really sink into you that first was like that big of a deal?
Well, the whole goal all day was just to make pars and qualify. So like, I didn't think about anything else. And like, I honestly was a little mad because for those who know the Lynx of Hiawatha, I parred 18, which is a par 5, from 130 yards out in the middle of the fairway. So I was pretty upset because on that tee, I was like, I'm making eagle and we're going to give 63 a run.
Yeah.
Just because I was at that point, I'm thinking even's getting in. So I got a few shots to play with. Like, I'm definitely in, like, and hit a great drive and just hit a terrible wedge. But I mean, for the guys that know that course, they'll know what I'm talking about. It's pretty bad. But
I know you being involved in the Binghamton scene now, you've gotten to know a lot of different guys of all different ages, too. Like, we were staying in touch when I went down to watch Grady Glennon from Hunter Tannersville, you know, got into the final group on the final day at the New York State Championship. He was going up against some guys that you know very well. And so you've gotten to know the younger generation as well from being down there.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, the switch to Binghamton was, looking back at it, at first I was a little worried about it. But now looking back at it, it's probably one of the better decisions I've made. I mean, I've just, this past year especially has been great. Like, I've met so many people, have so many relationships now. And like, it's kind of nice to be back where I played all my high school sports too, because you already know a good amount of people. But now, like, your relationships are a little better now that you're living down there. But the one kid that Grady played with was Dante Bertone.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a stick. He could play. I don't really know where he's going to college, but I met him, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And he just grinds. He puts in a lot of work. Like, he wants it. Like, he's going to go to a good school and play. So,
have you played that course in Elmira that they had the championship at?
I haven't.
Mark Twain.
I'm going to try to get out there. At one point, I was trying to get out there because Mason used to go to Elmira, and he always, like, come out and play.
Yeah.
Like, we would try to go back and forth, but I never got out there.
Tough course.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. It's really nice. But, and for Grady, right?
Yeah.
For him to get in that final round, that's something to be proud of, too. Like, you know, first you got to make it through your section qualifying, and then you got to get into the state tournament, then you got to actually play in the state tournament, you know, and if that's his first time there, that's a huge accomplishment, and, you know, looking forward.
And he's a junior, so going into his senior year, I know he has goals to get back there again, and he's done a lot of work this summer playing different he's in some sort of, I would call it, his dad had a good name for it, like the official name, but it almost seemed like AAU golf.
Yeah.
Where they play like a whole tour of New England. And
okay.
So he really is putting the time in.
Yeah, yeah.
Him and his younger brother. It's impressive. There's a whole group at Hunter Tannersville right now that boys and girls that are just really phenomenal golfers. And a lot of them are younger. Grady's younger brother, I think, just finished up eighth grade. There was a girl, Kate Smith, as well, who just finished seventh grade, I believe, who trains in Albany and does a lot of great stuff. So if you're a Delaware League fan, a lot of good names to watch out for. But interested to see, now that Grady's been there once, like, how hard it is to get back now that there's that pressure, or will he just cruise right to it again?
Right. So, I mean, every round is different, though. So, you know, you never know. But he's got that experience now, so I'm sure he'll be okay.
And what's crazy about it was he wasn't happy with the final day. So what I did is, I went on the final day. His dad was keeping me posted the day before. He shot really well. He makes the final group. And I said, I'm going to come down and follow you on Twitter and just post about every hole. So I went down. I walked the course with the final group, with his dad, and just tweeted about every hole. And really, it was maybe two bad shots all day that cost him. Like, he was super consistent, but those two bad shots were just, that's what killed him. And it's like, man, you had to play absolutely perfect golf to have a chance, you know? And it was amazing to watch three high school guys just kind of get after it like that. And I was like, I can't even imagine being that good.
Well, I mean, at that level, that's how golf is, you know? Even one bad shot takes you right out of it. You know, like, you could play 17 and a half perfect holes and play one hole bad and you're out of it. And I think the other kid in that group was named Brody Burgess, I think, I want to say. He's from the Rochester area.
Yes, younger
He
kid.
Ended up he was the first alternate to Monroe, and he got ended up
no
getting
way.
In. So I actually, he was in my playoff group, and then he ended up being at the State Am, and then I saw Dante there as well, and he's like, yeah, that's the kid that I beat in the playoff. I was like, oh, I know him. I met him like 2 weeks ago at Monroe.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so Dante kind of coming down the stretch, let it slip a little bit, and this guy from Rochester was making a charge up the board, and they ended up having a playoff on 18, and really just came down to the putt at the end.
Yeah.
And there had to be 200-300 people there watching him right on the 18th green right by the clubhouse. I mean, it was exciting.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, Dante being a section four guy, I'm like, come on, man. Like, yeah, you've been in the lead all day. Like, hang on here.
Dante's got like a little bit of swagger to him. He's got like that, like, not like the it factor, but he's got that confidence in him where like that 15-footer to him just felt like nothing probably.
He hit some shots during the day where the pressure was really on, where it was like that, almost like we were talking about before, like, it's like he wasn't thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And there was another Rochester area athlete in the final group that it was just not his day, and he got super frustrated. And you could tell from the minute he got frustrated, the rest of his day was kind of shot.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't reel it back in. That's why I thought Grady, a couple of tough shots, he still kept his composure. And I'm like, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's such a good dude. And he... he wants to play with, like, you're like his idol, man. Like, he wants to he wants to play with you so bad. I was trying to get him to the tournament, but his family spends a lot of time down south in the summertime playing. So he's really put some time into it.
Yeah.
But so tell us more about the amateur championship when you get there to New Rochelle. I know it maybe didn't end the way you wanted it to, but how was the experience overall?
The course was sweet. I don't really know the correct way to pronounce it because I got yelled at when I was down there for not pronouncing it.
All these courses have tough names, man.
So it's called Waikigo, or it's like Y. I just said Waikigo. They're like, no, it's like Waikugo. And I'm like, well, what's the difference?
Right.
So anyway, it's a beautiful course, pretty challenging. Like, it was in great shape. It was pretty wet. You know, I thought we maybe could have played lift clean place. There's a couple mud balls. I mean, it makes a difference, but it doesn't make a difference. But, like, it makes enough difference where, you know, if you're in the middle of the fairway 100 yards and there's a little mud, take some spin off of it, nose dives, like, now you got 25 feet instead of, like, a wedge where you're normally 10 feet for birdie.
Right.
So it makes a little bit of a difference, but the course was great. First day, I had nothing. I mean, I had the worst round I played all summer. I had like 38 or 39 putts. I just putted so bad. I had like the chipping and putting yips. Just couldn't even get it close.
Nerves or?
No, maybe a little bit of lack of preparation just because I didn't get a ton of practice in this summer. I just kind of just played. But then like the second round went out, like almost holed my first shot from like, I had 70 yards in this par five, put it to about a foot, hit some really good shots. I holed out on one of the holes. It was pretty cool. You know, had some people there watching, so a hole out in front of them too. It was pretty cool. But played a lot better the second round. It just first round, I counted at least 8 mistakes that I could have been easily fixed or like avoided. And, you know, if I take 5 of those away, like I make the cut.
Right.
No problem.
Right.
It's just, but hey, it's golf. I mean, it shows you can play really bad one day and play all right the next day.
Will you get a chance to do that again in the near future, or will you not because of your pro status?
Yeah, that might be, besides like the college events, I think that might be the last amateur event I probably will ever play in. I'm going to try to apply to a couple events in Florida that are pretty big am events, one right in Orlando. But if I don't get in that, I probably won't do anything
right
am-wise besides college. Because once I at this point, like now, it's like there's no point in playing in events if you're not going to try to make money.
Right.
Like, especially after I graduate.
Right.
Like, if I'm going to play and stuff, I want to make money.
Is our captain and crew days over, man? Is that?
No, I guess as long as it's not at Ole Out, I'll play in any captain and crew.
I got to maybe find one this fall.
I just can't play at Ole Out. People get mad. I think, well, I mean, the last time we played, we had a pretty decent day, and we didn't even play that good, I thought.
No.
Like, we shot 17 under.
Yeah.
But, like, We had to make 4 eagles to shoot that. Like, we had like 6 or 7 pars, which is just.
I thought we made it hard on ourselves, all things considered.
No.
It was still a great day.
No,
but
it was a lot of fun.
Well, you did take some heat for that.
Yeah. And that was the last captain and crew I've played in since. I told the guys, I said, I'll play as my own ball in this go out and play. Like, I'll be fine with that. It'd be a little competition.
I think the winning score at my tournament was 16 under, so it was very close. Craig Dawson had a bomb on the longest drive. So, you ever got a chance to play with him?
I haven't. I know he hits it a long ways, though.
Yeah, that was impressive, and I wish I had seen it. But everybody that saw where it landed and got to see it said it was awesome. So, on that hole at Ole Out, how hard would it be to put it on the green? How far is that?
From the white tees, it's about a 350 carry. I've seen it done multiple times with Harris and John Michael.
Right.
So
wow, John Michael can put it on there?
Probably one of my favorite John Michael stories. There's a couple of them because he hits it so far, but it's like pitch black. There's like 7 of us. Like back in like early college, or I think we might have even been in high school, and like Tanner and John might have been their first summer back from college. And so I think it was me, Teddy, Tanner, Ryan, John, like
the crew,
just the normal guys that played with us. And, you know, the fog setting in, you can't really see. You can still see, but after like 100 yards, you can't see the ball. So he hits it, and he didn't even hit it that good, I thought, because he kind of like hit behind it a little bit, and you can see the divot. And I was laughing because, like, oh, you took a divot with a driver. Like, what are you doing? And all of a sudden we heard, like, this thud. I'm like, there's no way that ball landed on the green. If you get up there, it's like 20 feet. You just hit in it and it's staying in its mark.
Wow.
And I'm like, there's no way. And I'm going to bust his balls here. But he ended up three putting for par.
Oh, which, no.
Which it kind of sums John's golf game up in a nutshell.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he hits it a mile. I mean, he hits five iron like 230, 240. And I'm just like, it's just stupid.
I attempted to get him in here this summer, but he was just leaving. Chatted with his mom briefly, and he was just leaving to go to some sort of camp or clinic for the rest of the summer.
So. Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know how to, like, he's playing down in Williamsport.
Yeah.
It's like a draft prospect league or something.
Yeah.
I don't really know exactly what it's called. He kind of just told me, like, oh, I'm going to go play, like, I'm making some money, but.
Almost sounded like Q school for baseball.
For baseball, yeah. But he had the last time I talked to him, probably about 3 weeks ago, he had a pretty good outing. I think he had 7 innings, 7 Ks, 1 hit, maybe no walks, maybe 1 walk, something. So he had a pretty good outing.
That's great. No, I hope to, and I've said this for a long time. I'd love to get Ryan in here. I'd love to get Tanner. I'd love to get John. All those guys. That's why the list of guests will never end. It's like there's just so many interesting people to chat with, and new ones are coming up all the time. So it's fun.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you about. We've been discussing this recently on the show a little bit of kind of promoting yourself. And I know that you kind of do your own golf social media stuff too. So I was just wondering. Your thoughts on that, why you decided to set it up, how you do it. I mean, I know you're always saying I should do more with it, but what you put on there is really interesting for someone like me to watch because it's just like, oh, what's he doing in training? What's he working on? Things like that. So what made you want to start doing that?
It just kind of I love taking swing videos, not to analyze them, just to kind of have them and post them a little bit. So just kind of started as like a fun thing. I think I can make it something a little better. Like at one point, I started making TikToks a little bit, just some funny TikToks. Like the one was this iron swing I had. It was like mid-February, got rain pants on, sweatshirts on, a winter hat, like almost, I think I might have had winter gloves on. It was so cold, but it took like this tiger sound of like, it's like that, just a nice comfortable 9 iron sound, like threw it in there just for fun, just for laughs. But I want to do more with it if I could. The problem is it's just so time consuming.
It's time consuming, isn't it?
It's so time consuming.
I think that's one thing that I run into is people are like, well, why don't you do this or why don't you do that? And it's like, it eats up a lot of your time. Mm-hmm. It really does. And when you're trying to chase 10 other things at the same time, you're like, I can't sit around and make a video. So video is very tough.
Like if I ever tried, if I just tried doing 9 holes, like a vlog.
Oh God.
It would take me like 3.5 hours to play 9 holes just because you had to move the camera here, restart it here and there, and you got to hit the shot. And then like, especially if you're playing like back in COVID, like when the golf course opened back up, me, Ryan, Tanner and those guys, like we would take a GoPro out.
Yeah.
We'd go sit it like 30 yards out in front of the tee box and just try to hit it just for fun.
Yeah.
Like I use my phone like I got insurance on my phone. If I hit it, I hit it. Like it'd be a cool video. Like it posted on social media everywhere.
So great. Like, do you follow Nicky Cass on Instagram?
I don't follow him, but I see his videos, and he's hilarious. It's like breaking 90.
He's doing a Nicky Breaks 90, and at least once a week he's doing a full video. And obviously he has a camera guy helping him, but the editing on that must take him forever because he's literally showing every shot of his round.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're trying to break 90, it's got to be a lot of shots in that round, too.
He shot, I think, a 105 the other day, and, you know, he's your classic good athlete. I mean, he's basically kind of like a comedian type of guy, and he has this goal to break 90. So a lot of it is funny because he'll hit shots, and he's got funny sound effects, and he's wants to throw the club and, you know, all that type of stuff. He's getting better, you can tell.
Yeah.
But I sit there and I think everyone watches this video, they love it, but I'm like, that had to take him at least a day just to edit the damn thing. So
like, and it's, I think his other stuff outside of golf is hilarious.
It's hilarious.
He's so funny. But like I got at Monroe, I met a kid named Evan Thompson.
Okay.
He played football at K Kennesaw State down in Georgia, and then he switched over to golf, but he's big into TikTok and social media. Got to meet him, and then the DOD King, Driver Off the Deck King.
Yeah, okay.
I met him at a tournament this summer. So I met a bunch of cool people this summer. It's just been a really fun summer overall, but like to find out and talk to them and, you know, get their experiences and stuff like that, it's pretty cool.
There's a lot that you could do in that world. It's just somehow having the time and the follow through and the drive. I guess it's like the podcast. Like a lot of people that even aren't familiar with the show, like even the company that like hosts my episodes where I upload them. I was talking to the tech support guy recently. He's like, dude, you have like over 200 episodes. Like you don't see that for, you know, kind of a quote unquote amateur podcast. Right. So, but it's just like, you got to just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And then eventually it builds up over time, but it's a daunting, you start thinking about doing videos and then you can think about, oh, I should be doing this instead. And
yeah,
you know, so do you just use your phone essentially?
Yeah. I mean, I had a GoPro at one point, but I gave it to my brother because he wanted to use it and I haven't got it back. So he could have it. It's fine. I just use my phone to take videos and stuff. And another thing with like the whole influencer stuff, like it's starting to become such like a saturated like market. That it's hard to like, you have to stick out somehow. Like that's where the Driver Off the Deck kid, like he sticks out because he does something different. He's just not playing nine holes every day, uploading it. Like, like he's doing something different. He's not afraid to put himself out there. Like it's just hard. And like, that's the other thing, like me trying to do more. It's like, I just don't have the time to compete or even try to do anything. Like I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing just for fun.
Yeah. I think there's something about that too. Like you can tell when someone's trying to do it for likes and views and when it's genuine. And I think like watching your stuff, obviously I'm interested in it because I know you, but I'm also like, oh, what's he up to today? And you know, you're not just trying to hit a hole in one every time. Like I'm interested to see like, what's he working on for his game? Watching a lot of your iron stuff is kind of fascinating, honestly. So
I think I bought one of those clip-on mics for your phone because I was going to do like a three-hole vlog with a couple friends, and I just brought it out one night to use it, to try it, and my phone fell off the tripod, and the receiver broke. So I was like, it's a sign. It's a sign I should not be doing this. So
I don't know if we mentioned it last time, and if I did, I mean, heck, that was 2 or 3 years ago when we last had you on. I have this idea of kind of doing like the match at Oleot where I take like two sets of great local athletes and have them kind of like they do like the Capital One thing with the NFL quarterbacks. And I think we could do it. I have a good video guy that we could follow him around, get the audio. I think it'd be a great YouTube video.
You find the people and you tell me a date and we'll do it. I'll close the course down for that.
I think it would be so much fun. I just think it has to be the right people. Yeah. Like if I had thought about it years ago, the group that you just mentioned would have been the right group.
They would still do it.
It might almost be worth having, like, if Teddy's around at some point, team him up with you and then have, like, Ryan or Tanner and John. Like, it would be so – that'd be so much fun.
What you should do is put – even do, like, a three-person scramble, find six guys, but make sure Tanner and John are on opposite teams because they are so competitive. It's just – it's pure comedy at that point. Like, this summer they played a three-round match to see who's better because they were talking so much trash. And, we have this app called 18 Birdies that we follow each other's scores. So that one day they went over to Oneonta and played, and I'm mowing, and I get hole-by-hole updates. So I'm checking, like, every 5 minutes and just laughing. And, like, they, like, at one point John's ball was in play, but they couldn't find it. And they had this whole rules question. They started arguing. I'm like, I hope you guys don't lose your friendship over a simple golf match. But no, they're funny to golf with for sure.
I guess one of my last wrap-up questions here is, I mean, have you got to play with Harris or any of those guys this summer? Like, who's kind of hot on the local scene right now?
I haven't played with really anybody besides those three or four guys when they're home. And I haven't played with Harris. I texted him yesterday, actually, to see if he wanted to play, but he had work yesterday. So we might try to play tonight. But I haven't played with him, haven't played with Todd, haven't played with Ryan. Just haven't played with him. I really, like, I'm in town for the days I got to work, and then the tournaments, I'm out of town.
Yeah.
I just haven't had the time to really go anywhere and play anywhere. So
there might not be an answer to this, but, like, have you seen anybody kind of on the rise locally through the county stuff or anyone you're like, oh, who's this person coming along?
I followed the Delaware a little bit, but it was more just to watch like the guys I know to see how they're playing, like Harris, Ryan, a couple other guys. But I haven't really been following it too much. I just been so busy. If I'm not working, I'm playing golf in a tournament somewhere, and if I'm not golfing, I'm working. So
my boss was talking to Justin the other day, and he kind of gave him the old, Nate would still love to have you on the show. And he goes, I just don't love talking about myself, and super quiet guy. I don't know if we ever could get him on here. I think it would have to be some sort of combo episode. Yeah. But if he had wanted to go on and try to do something like you're doing, could he have done it, you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's hard to tell because, I mean, the style of play is different. I'm not calling you old, Justin, but, I think he would have done it probably 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's just a different story. Like, now everything's evolved. Like, now everything, like, technology-wise, like, they want to roll back a golf ball so it doesn't go as far, right? So it's hard to say. He definitely was good enough at one point to try.
Yeah.
And probably made it at some point or somewhere. But, again, it's hard to tell because the times have changed and...
So last question, we always ask everybody favorite local place to eat. Do you have a Binghamton spot you can recommend to us now that you've been there for a while?
I mean, like Chipotle is just a go-to.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this little cafe by Olam's.
I was going to say, what was the name of that place?
The place we went to, it was Cafe de Corso or something.
Yes. Yeah. Amanda there. She loved it.
It was amazing. But you got that. And then Remlick's is great. It's expensive, but it's worth the. I went one time. I had a gift certificate for $100.
Perfect.
Two of us went. And
it's gone.
$93. I said, "All right, well, pretty much covered." Left a tip. I said, "We're gone." Cortez, another good one. I like Remlick's. Yeah, I mean, I would say though, it's definitely just Chipotle. That's like the team quick stop type of place.
Yeah.
MJ's in Owego is good too.
Okay. Well, I'm hopeful I'll get down to BU a bunch this year between, when Lacey comes to town and now we've kind of gotten to know Evie Coleman this summer a little bit, who plays for the women's team down there. And, I'd like to see the Ty Bertram return when he comes to town. I think there could be a lot of good reasons to head down to BU this year. And, Liv Kennedy from Green, right, now going to be pitching for your softball team. Cool to see so many locals there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been great.
Got pretty close with some of the softball team. The head coach is actually, like, her brother runs the course.
Play at.
So, like, I know the coach really well, so.
I was so excited. I always wondered if Liv had looked there and they were just like, small school kid. I mean, you know how it goes. Yeah. And Liv went to a D2 in New Jersey last year. I mean, she was pretty much, I think she was first team all state or state player of the year senior year at Green 2 years ago when they made the state final, and then killed it last year at a D2. And I guess Binghamton must have come knocking and she wanted to be closer to home and
absolutely
perfect fit. So, well, Evan, thanks, man. Thank you to your whole family, everything for the tournament. Again, we raised 10 grand. And couldn't have done it without all your hard work.
Yeah, no problem. I'm really happy I got to help out.
Yeah, well, we'll be following you, and we'll do this again at some point. And check back in the archives. Again, he was on episode 64, so that was quite a while ago. But we've had a bunch of other golf episodes, and I'm trying to line up some more as well. I know Todd's been wanting to get back in here. He would be another one, so... He's always got some good stories. So, and he's probably upset that he got second at the Nate Lull tournament this year. So he's got a vendetta for next year. But yeah, check back in the archives. That'll wrap up episode 228. We'll see you again soon on the Nate Lull podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Lull podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.